I would say to you that the majority of candidates that go through competency-based interviews have negative feelings towards the company they're about to go and work for. So the minute you get an interview request with a hiring manager, you connect. You know, does it allow me to really get over all the amazing things that I've done? They are so engaged in the process. You are pretty much invisible.
Have you ever sold out for a fee, Simon?
I'm going to say, hand on heart, no. I have true value in that. I wouldn't. The answer is no. But what has happened is where I have put forward a candidate that I've thought hasn't been as strong as my number one candidate, and they've ended up getting the job. And I'm like, how the hell did that just happen? So in a way, you could say that there have been CVs and candidates that have been put forward that I've not rated as highly as others, which is kind of part and parcel of the game. I think there is a thing in recruitment where you have some fillers. And let me be really honest about that. You've got a shortlist of five, three are great, two are average, but you know the two are average are going to get rejected because you need three CVs anyway for interview. I'm very proud to say that most of the candidates that I present are interviewed. If they don't make the grade, they don't get sent. If they don't get sent, I'm on a call with my client to say, I can't send people because this has happened. And actually, this is about the role or the budget or the tech or whatever it might be. So the answer to my question is no. Have I sold out to do things generally? Yeah, absolutely. I'll sell myself to the devil, right? I'll sell my own granny for business. And have done for many, many years. I think, you know, when I look back on EMBS in 2003, you know, the history behind that was that EMBS was called East Midlands Business Services, and we actually bought that company for a bottle of Chianti. That's the history of EMBS. Wow. We wanted to do that because right back 20 years ago, we were very regionalized. This is obviously way before the days of remote working. And we were knocking on doors and saying, we're East Midlands Business Services. And they were like, well, are you a recruitment agency? And we're like, no, we provide business services. And that would allow us to get into conversations with companies about reducing cost, their hiring strategy, because people don't want to talk to recruiters. And over 2, 3, 4 years, we ended up losing the East Midlands Business Services bit and became EMBS. And now we work literally across the UK and the world. But in that moment, we sold out because in a way we were trying to make ourselves look a lot bigger than we were. You know, we were always talking about, you know, this enormous team that we had, and it wasn't really like it. It was an absolute kind of fake it till you make it kind of scenario. But I think a lot of organizations do that. But I also think that, which is fantastic news for any startup or scale up business in any sector, through LinkedIn and personal branding, companies are choosing people to work with rather than companies to work with.
Yeah, agree.
And I think that's a fundamental difference. Another reason why personal brand development is so important.
100%. Good for you. And I think you know, you've got to take some things on face value. You've got to trust. Yeah, I think trust disappeared a little while back, and then I think the pandemic brought us all back together for a position of, you know, that. We operate in a different landscape now. We operate in a different space. Everyone's kind of sat in their own back bedrooms. And so there was almost a compulsion to trust people and work with people differently. And I think that's changed the game again back to where, like you say, that human element that we touched on around the AI, that's really brought that back to the surface of how important that is. We wouldn't have been where we are, I don't think, after the pandemic in a kind of recovery position, had we not been as well fueled by human beings.
Honestly, that's such a great point. Just to pick up on that point, seeing people in their bedroom, seeing people at home, seeing people in hoodies, seeing people with their dogs and cats, that moment was a social change that was, on reflection, in business terms, monumental, because it brought humanity, it brought equality into the conversation. It meant that the comment that I made earlier was just so right, because people were choosing the guy with the puppy who walks, you know, takes the puppy out and walks on lunch, that's consistently putting out insightful content that works for this big brand, but we don't really give a damn about that. that's a person that that resonates with me. That's a person I want to work with. That was a game-changing moment, Neil, that you just highlighted there. And it's amazing for anybody that's a solopreneur or a small business owner, giving you the confidence to know that you don't have to be big to survive in business. Amazing moment in history.
It is. Authenticity, it's worth its weight in gold. Speaking of authentic, where are we? Where do we stack up as the UK from a technology perspective? Where do we stack up against the traditional kind of nearshore competition, but certainly across mainland Europe? Are we the best? Are we as good as we like to think we are with all the investment around AI from various organizations? Are we still rare up there, or are we chasing the game?
I think we are chasing the game a little bit, to be honest with you. You know, the feedback, the reason I say that, which is my immediate response, is that I'm talking to companies that are offshoring software development in greater volumes. I'm hearing that Eastern Europe is a destination place for good software devs. I'm hearing that there is good movement in South Africa because they're in a very similar time zone, and there's some good opportunity there. But on the flip side of that, I still believe, and I had a conversation with a tech business owner earlier on this week, I still believe that if you're in a scale for sale situation, that there is still value in building a team, an actual physical team, and an actual UK physical team. It's not as important in tech than it is maybe in the recruitment industry, where you want to actually build a really good, robust team. So I think that while that world has developed somewhat, I think people still want the culture, even if it's a remote culture, of having UK people together with a common purpose and a mission to go and deliver something or go and build something. So, yeah, I think the competition is biting on our heels.
Personally, my belief is that our engineers in the UK are some of the best in the world. I genuinely believe that. I think a commercial business, we find it difficult is the salary tags associated, which I'm not going to get into, because at the same time as thinking they're entirely warranted, it's very challenging to bring those in against tight budgets, which we all have as businesses. So you're then left in that position of, do I just bump the projects out entirely? Do I try and make do with some kind of off-the-shelf equivalent and just try and make it fit? Or do I consider the near or offshore capability for half, if not less, of the expense? And you're right, on the visa side, there's very limited opportunity. People are not prepared to buy into that kind of approach. So any kind of promises that any government or anybody makes around employment guarantees in the future, you can't do it. It's not there. The industry is way too unstable for that. But that's all of that fundamentally underpins why I believe that the permanent hire is on sort of borrowed time. I think the idea of businesses being a lot more tactical with their play for a strategic long-term win, I liken it to the NFL teams. You know, they've got a squad that they roll in to attack, and then they'll take them off when they're defending and put a whole other squad in. You know, that, as businesses, that's where we are. We're a whole lot more nervous about taking a punt on bringing quite expensive permanent engineers into play. We'll take the shorter term, either contract or option, or that nearshore scale up, scale down as we need it. I think the permanent hire is in a spotlight, and something's got to give somewhere. So it'll be one to watch, most definitely. I think that space.
Yeah, agreed. I think, of course, we're talking from the perspective of tech, and for you, very much around software engineering and product development. Look, dead quick summary here. An engineer can log off a system on Friday from home and log on to a new system on Monday from home. They do not get in their car now in software engineering and go through the glass doors of a new business and say hello to their front of house and shake hands and work out where the coffee and tea is. They're logging off one system and logging on to another. They're working on one stack, potentially working on another stack, which is potentially almost identical. That has changed the landscape as regards to the way that people even think about employment and transact with employers, specifically in software engineering, specifically maybe even remote. So for me, what's happening when you look at frequency of work, you look at the tenures of software engineers, is 2 years. 3 years is long, 2 years is short. So let's have this conversation with them. We're building a product. We know you just want to be here for 24 months. You want to learn, you want to build the product, and then you want to go. Are you happy to give me 24 months? If you do, I will give you a retention bonus at 24 months to say thank you very much. So you see out the nature of the project. Okay, because I know you're going to want to exit when we get it done. Okay, if you want to leave in the, if you want to leave within that time, there's a big meaty notice period because we can't have you leave. You're going to be right in the thick of it. So yeah. Come in 24 months, we'll pay you well. You get a bonus at the end of it. That's what we do. Versus, oh, we'd like to come and stay with us. We're thinking about a retention strategy. We'd love for you to be a lifer in our company. It's just not going to work. So to pick up your point, there is a different, there's something that's emerging in the market. They're not contractors. They're not permies. They want the security of a permanent role, but they don't want to be a contractor chasing the next contract. So I've said this for a while now. We need to have more honest conversations with people coming in and say, look, how long can you give me? Are you good for 24 months? Yeah, that's cool. Let's go with that.
Yeah.
That seems to be more the conversation that should be happening.
On my very exciting card, some quick fire questions, okay. Captain Bucknell. Biggest influence on your career?
Wow. You know what, when I think of that question, I always think of two people. The first person is somebody that I met as a boy. He had a black BMW 5 Series at 25. I said, you're going to be my friend. I befriended him. 6 months later, he said, do you want to come and work on my team? I went from working in a music shop to working in tech recruitment. A guy called David Voice, still works in recruitment now. He gave me my first break into the industry. And a guy called Richard May Brown, who was also a leader of and friend, a dear friend, who said to me at 25 years old, I'm going to give you 25K in your next pay rise. You can go and buy a house now. Start to believe in yourself. At that weekend, I went to view a house with my dad. One house, offer. I put in the offer, asking price, and I bought that house off the back of that conversation. That house doubled in value in sort of 3 years, because we were in the height of that moment where, you know, house prices were going through the roof in the sort of late 90s. So when I think about people that have influenced my career, it's those two people that really got me in there and gave me the self-belief to kind of, you know, really go for that. And so, yeah, hopefully that answers your question.
No, it does. Self-belief is an enormous thing. You cannot undervalue anybody who can instill that. So that's a beautiful, beautiful one. Greatest achievements?
I mean, probably being 21 next month is a hell of an achievement. I think that's an achievement. I'll tell you one of the things that's an achievement for me, and the man's through that door. I took a guy who was a recruiter with a few years experience. He's now my business partner and equal shareholder in the company. He's a guy who I took as really into the industry from a rookie, and he's now an owner of the business. You know, you say that, you know, you can only really call yourself a leader if you've built and developed and grown other leaders. For me, that's a pretty sizable achievement, you know, on a human level and on a business level.
Fabulous. Love that. And agree entirely with that sentiment. Hardest lesson?
I think the hardest lesson is always the old cliche, really, is that you have got to fail. Like, you've got to be comfortable. You've got to get comfortable with feeling uncomfortable. You've got to get comfortable with feeling failure. There is absolutely no way that we could have got to 21 years without making the mistakes that we have and learning from those mistakes. I know that's, you know, it's been said a million times, but the biggest learning is that, really. You've just got to go for it. That's the one. That's the one.
Be brave. I like that. Advice for all of the kids currently sitting the GCSEs right now?
I think I do a bit of coaching in that space, as you know, and I think you just don't need to worry about the future. You don't need to worry about being something. You don't need to visualize what you think you're going to be. It is absolutely okay not to know what you want to do. It's absolutely fine. I know people that are 40, 50 years old, still don't know what they want to do. Okay. do not worry that you've not worked it out yet. Okay, just don't worry about that. You have to just worry or think, not even worry, you just have to think about whether or not you put in a shift in that lesson, on that day, on that week. Because when you're young, and I know this because my eldest daughter's about to take her A-levels, it can be incredibly overwhelming. There are so many things that are happening around you, relationships, learning, your own physical and mental changes that are happening. So all you just do not think too far ahead. Don't let the adults tell you that you have to figure it out yet or you have to be something. Just be in the moment, but just try to do the best you can in the present. That's all you can do. Just always classic, just always do your best. If you do your best, you know, nobody can ever ask any more of you than that. But you always have to ask yourself the question, did I do the best? You owe it to yourself to do that. And if you make a promise to yourself, make sure you keep it.
Beautiful. Perfect. 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 As always, this is the locker room. So final question for all of our guests. What is in your locker that has made you a success over all of these years?
Well, I kind of think I alluded to that earlier on. I left school with 3 GCSEs, English, so I can talk, music, because it's my biggest passion outside of my family, and home economics, so I can cook, right? That is what I came out of school with at 16. I did an apprenticeship. I met the guy with the black BMW. He gave me my break into the industry. Self-belief is the one thing that has made me successful. Undying optimism and self-belief. And at 51, in a couple of weeks, I'm 51. That is unwavering. It is still there. And I still believe that what's round the corner is going to be better. At the end of every year, I think the next year is going to be better than the year before, and it has been for lots of different reasons. So self-belief and a deep internal optimism, I think, are the things that have made me successful. I think also my mum and dad picking me up as a kid and telling me to talk properly, to articulate things properly. Having the gift of good communication skills for me has been, without question, the biggest skill and the biggest asset. So kids, if you're watching this and your parents are picking you up on saying slightly weird words or not articulating things, it's for good reason. You know, you're gonna need that communication skill. And if you think about what we said earlier about AI, meaning that you need to double down on your human skills, self-belief, optimism, communication, empathy, those are the things that are so important no matter what you do. Even if you're a techie plugged in and coding all day, you still need that skill set. That's just so important.
Yeah, I agree again. But I think if for those who haven't had the experience of spending any time with Simon, it's always time well spent, because that absolutely falls from every pore in the man's beard. You very much do live all of your values and your beliefs there that you've just laid out. It's always a pleasure, sometimes brutal honesty, but it's always a pleasure and it's always beneficial. You're a man of value for sure. Simon, thank you so much for giving up your time to come and chat to us here in the locker room. It's been a hugely entertaining and impactful conversation. I think we probably could have gone on for another couple of hours easy, so there might be a volume 2 at some point. Really appreciate your time. Thanks to everyone watching. If you haven't already done so, hit subscribe, hit like, add some comments. We'll make sure that Simon gets all that feedback, and again, we'll put all of Simon's links to his businesses and his services that he offers in the comments below. But until next time, this is the Tech Locker, bringing up the locker room. Enjoy your afternoon. We'll see you again very soon. Say goodbye, Simon.
See you all. Cheers.
Take care. Bye-bye.